Accession number 10165, reel number 11.
Martin McLean, reel 11. You were telling me about how Gill was brought to book, so to speak.
To go before the command officer, it was called, you appear before orderly room, see your orders. And it was another ceremonial parade. Every man had to be as clean and as smart as a button stick. Now, we used to use that term, button stick, because a polished button stick was perfect. And so we had to turn out as neat as possible for to appear before a command officer. So you'd have all of the company order sergeants on parade, you'd have the BOC on parade, you'd have other people out before the command officer's orders, and the RSM would be taking it. Now, the RSM would call you on the veranda, you'd be marched in before the command officer. Now, this was a new command officer called Churchill, and a very strong, disciplined type of officer, came into the battalion. He'd been with the regiment for many years, but he was rather well liked. Marched Gill in before him, and he asked Gill why he had gone absent, and questioned him, and to the amazement of all the witnesses, Gill stepped forward and punched the CO straight in the face. And at this moment caused consternation in the order room, because this had never been happened before. And the command officer just shook his head and looked up in astonishment, but he scowled fiercely at Gill, who, by the way, we'd all pounced on and pinioned him down because he was getting vicious. And he was frog-marched out and put in a cell in the guard room. And then we were all whisked back quickly into the command officer, and then we had to put us straight on evidence for a court-martial. They took our names, and we had to then appear before a proper court-martial for this serious offence. Well, this was the outcome of the holiday weekend. The battalion was now back in the camp and resumed normal duties. But it was quite a talking point for quite some time, all this incident that happened in the barracks whilst this incident had gone, while these things had gone on. The company commander sent for me and the company sergeant major questioned me, because if I'd been at fault, they'd have had me down for it. By being down, it means that it pushed you from a lance corporal. But I was blameless in this. As a matter of fact, I got a bit complimented for it, the way I handled it. But I'd like to speak. I told you before that the BOC was responsible for ensuring that the sick parade men came on parade, fell in, and marched them off to the sick, the MI room, as we called it, for the medical officer to inspect them. Well, this was another hard, very hard, cruel way of dealing with the sick people. The idea was to discourage people being on sick for silly reasons, you know, trying to avoid a parade, trying to avoid going on training. So it was an army routine that the sick men would parade on the square, the BOS, battalion order sergeant, would come along and inspect them. The men would have to be turned out in, again, button stick order, with their putties on, their knee crease trousers on, polished boots, and carry what we call your small kits. Your small kit was your cap comforter, which is, you might all know, it was like a woolen thing which you could turn inside out and wear it as a cap, like the commanders used to do, or you could open it and it used to be a long, like, woolen bag, and in there you'd put your housewife, which is your darning kit, your sewing kit, your hold all, containing your knife, fork, spoon, razor, comb, lather, brush, and button stick. And then you'd have to carry all your shoe brushes and polishing brushes and your polishing kit with you, your towel and soap. And then sometimes the BOC right, put your kits out for inspection. And you'd have to put everything out of there, out for inspection. And you just have one fiery, particular fiery man who is now dead. Biff Wilson, we called him. He'd check every little thing in among your small kits. And if you had hairs in your comb or your hairbrush, put them on a charge. Dirty kits. And they'd inspect your kit, and then if you had been injured, like I had been on another occasion, where I couldn't bend, you had to get down there and put your kit back in the thing. And it was all a drill parade as well. The BOC then got you assembled up, moved to right and file, right turn, and march you off. And sometimes the BOC would think you want a bit shaken up because the BOS had told him to do it. He'd move you off the double to the MI room, which was, modern day, wouldn't stand for it. But it was, the idea was to discourage any malingerers, as we called it. And so we took them into the MI room and left them there with the MI man, and then went back later on and collected the sick reports and returned them to the company. From there, I don't know, I can't tell you much more about the Lance Corporal's duties, but anyway, I'd like to just go on to a Lance Corporal's duties on guard.
Hang on, what happened at Gill's court martial? Were you called as a witness or didn't they need
you? Yes, I was called to it as a witness to Gill's court martial, and they are very formal affairs with three senior officers taking the court and the top chairs, a defending officer and a prosecuting officer. You also had a sergeant in charge of the court, whose job it was to usher in witnesses and take them out and bring them in again, you know, as required, and swear them on the Bible about their evidence being true and this, that and the other. He was known as the court orderly. And so we all took our turns going in for this court martial. And previous to this, we'd had a run through with evidence. And as I told you before, I was a rough brought up lad, and I didn't know King's English very well. I spoke very, very broad Tyneside, and I didn't realise this till much later on in life, of military life. And I heard the senior corporal saying, after the first man had stated his evidence, that he saw Gill step forward and punch the commanding officer, Churchill, in the face. And the next one, who, instead of seeing this, all this detail through, he says, "Sir, I was present on such and such a date when Private Gill was up for trial, and I corroborate what Corporal so-and-so said." In other words, saves a lot of repeating. But I couldn't get this word they were saying, and you know, you listen for all tips in the army, so that you become eventually an efficient corporal and this, that and the other. So it was my turn to give off evidence, and I nearly burst the order room into hysterics, because instead of saying I corroborate, I couldn't get the word they were saying. I said I corrugate the evidence given. Anyway, this man eventually went up for this court-martial official.
This run through of the evidence, what was the purpose of that? To make sure it was waterproof? I mean,
well, it was more for not to see if it was waterproof, but to see that everyone knew the procedure of a court martial. I wasn't used with it. Maybe some of the corporals weren't used. In other words, you went in and you went into the room, and you were shown, the sergeant would put you standing in front of the court. You'd be given a Bible to swear on, and that then you'd be asked to give your evidence, and then the prosecuting officer would ask you questions on it, and the defending officer would ask you questions on what you had to say.
So it wasn't to fix the evidence and make sure there were no inconsistencies. It was just purely to help you with the routine.
Yes.
And to make you familiar with what would happen.
No, I wouldn't say that there was any sort of try to fix of any evidence at all. It was just a map to ensure that people knew what they had to do in the court martial, because you're going to appear in front of officers of other regiments, senior officers, and maybe they didn't want the regiment to look lowly or poor in its training, so we were given a bit of run-through in our procedures. Well, Gill went away for 6 months' detention back to Glasshouse, and we never saw him again. Don't know what happened to him, but he never came back to the battalion.
Did they question you at all about your evidence?
Yes. Oh, yes, they always ask you just simple things. Did you actually see this happen? Yes, sir. What were you doing in the order room at the time in front of the command officer? I was witness, because this man was in my company. And you have to tell them the whole thing once again, and they try to find flaws in your evidence. As you see, you hear so much of, but with the training you get, you speak a verbatim. In other words, sir, I was present in the barrack room on such and such a date at such and such a time. When I noted this man was absent, I reported his absence on staff parade, and the man was eventually brought before the command officer on such and such a date. He had to give particulars in this at such and such a time, and he was marched in, and there, whilst given evidence, he stepped forward and punched the command officer, Lieutenant Colonel Churchill, in the face. And so you give it actually word for word, so that they don't have to come back to you and ask you when did it happen, how did it happen, this, that and the other. So it was all part of army training. You did it in such a proper way that there was no comeback on times, dates and things of that nature. But they do question you, was this man provoked, was he upset when you met him? Well, he wasn't really, so couldn't understand his reason, but of going absent, they try to find out reason. Did he tell you he was going absent? No. And so the man was eventually tried and found guilty.
Did he give, at the court-martial, did he give any reasons that you might have heard?
No, he didn't give any reasons at all. He said, I decided to do a bunk. Do a bunk means, as the term in these modern days, go over the wall, disappear. Well, we didn't have any walls, he just had to walk out of barracks. And Carrick was just a short distance away from us, and so was Darlington, if it comes to that. I think Darlington was about 8 or 9 miles, and so he'd walk off to Darlington for a bit of...
What about actually hitting the colonel? He didn't say why.
No, didn't say at all. Nothing at all. You see, we only give our evidence at the court-martial, and then we are marched out, and we stand outside... Well, light around outside. You don't light around. You remain outside of the court-martial room in case you're called back again until the end of the court-martial. So what happens is, for his reasons, for hitting the CO, I don't know, because that's done in the room in front of the court-martial. All we were waiting for was to see what was happening and see if we were required anymore and go back. Well, the army was severe with its punishments to people... for misdemeanours, but it was part of discipline, and I fell in line with that. I just thought it was only right and proper that a man done wrong should be punished.
Were you ever punished for anything at that time?
I was never punished of any sort, bar I got 2 days defaulters for a silly thing. It may be jokey, you can delete it if you want later on. We're on battalion exercise, on company exercises. And it was a night exercise whereby you marched on tapes. Now, tapes was... They used to lay white tapes out on the ground so that a unit could take a position for an attack onto an enemy's position quietly, efficiently, and in the dark, so that you lined up ready in the proper position for the assault to go in. And in order to do this, the practice you marching on tapes, which in fact happened in the First War, they'd lay white tapes on the ground so you could see them, and you'd walk along in single file until somebody says stop quietly, and this is your section position. They'd have guides out taking you in position, and so we were fixed up into an attack position in the dark, ready for an early light assault, as you would term it, practice, so it was. And we're climbing over a high bank, and the lad in front of me let off in me face. He broke wind, and I got so annoyed at this, and I was so disgusted, and he started laughing. I got stuck into him. That meant we had a fight. And just at that same spot, unfortunately for me, was the company sergeant major, who grabbed me and grabbed this other lad, took my names, and through this I got 2 days of defaulters.
What did defaulters entail?
Defaulters meant that Ravalli used to go at 6 o'clock. Half an hour later on was staff parade. You had to have your bed made up and out of that barrack room, dressed and ready for work at 6:30, and you went on the staff parade. And there the regimental police took you over, and they'd give you some jobs, like maybe cleaning out the guard room prior to the guard handing over later on, or doing many menial jobs, go down the stables, helping them book out the stables, helping to clean the harness of the horses, and all sorts of things of that nature. That was first thing in the morning. During the day, you were off on your normal duties, but as soon as your normal duties were over, which is the battalion's normal duties were over, defaulter call would sound, and off you'd go again, and maybe spend 2 or 3 hours with the regimental police on duties up at the officer's mess, scrubbing floors in the officer's mess, washing dishes, brushing the parade ground, getting leaves off the parade ground, doing all sorts of menial tasks that had to be done in the battalion, maybe digging a garden. And so you are kept occupied while everybody else is relaxing and enjoying themselves. And then you'd go for your evening meal, and then the same thing happened at the night time. You're out with the defaulters, doing work. And at 7 o'clock at night, which was the end of the soldier's day, they'd dismiss you, and you had to get dressed up in your uniform for these duties of fatigues, like reporting for duties of morning. Like the rest of the battalion, we donned our canvas. Canvas was a pair of canvas trousers and a canvas top with brass buttons on, so that it was like a fatigue outfit. We used to do all our training and work and individual training in this outfit to save our serge. Serge was the army uniforms, your trousers and your jackets, tunics we called them. So we wore this canvas stuff until 7 o'clock at night. Now, when retreat sounded, that meant it was the end of the soldier's day, which isn't so much officially recognised as it is today. It was just a bugle call to us. But any man walking out of the barrack room after that hour had to be properly dressed in khaki. He need not wear putties, but he could wear slacks and his tunic and his hat. He had to wear his hat nearly at all times because of the fact that you had to wear it for saluting officers. There's so many officers around because each battalion was more or less up to its full establishment, and they may have passed the orderly officer, the captain of the week, or a company commander. You had to salute them.
But as
if
a defaulter, not, what would happen as a defaulter?
As a defaulter, you were called up to attention by the military, the regimental policeman in charge. So after retreat, we had to be dressed in our service dress and go onto the square on the veranda with the regimental police. And they dismiss you, they give you a chivvying up, they inspect you. If they found your dirty buttons are untidy or a button loose on your tunic, they'd give you a rollicking, maybe put you on a charge for more defaulters. And then they'd chase you off to your barrack room, and in a short while afterwards the bugle would sound again. They had regular intervals for sound defaulter call. You'd be allowed a short while to go across to the naffy for a cup of tea. But in this naffy was the regimental police once again supervising discipline in the canteen. And you had to behave yourself there. You were only allowed in about a half an hour in there because you're a defaulter, and out you went. You'd rush back to your barrack room and do your preparation of cleaning your kit and getting ready for your next day's military training. So in fact, your full day was absorbed by the army, either by your own training, or what wasn't training was absorbed with punishment training. And I had 2 days of this, and during this 2 days I was a bit sick, because it happened on the Friday, and on Saturday we had a company commander's inspection. This is where the true comradeship of an army comes in. The company commander's inspection entails a full kit layout. That is, everything you have is laid out in the bed, which I've explained in a previous tape, in tip-top condition, ready for the company commander to come along. And I was weary when I came in off the last staff parade. Now, we defaulters, many of us used to stay up after lights out polishing kit and cleaning kit because we couldn't get it done. Or would be up early before reveille, preparing our bed up for an inspection before going out on a defaulter call, getting washed and shaved and all this before having to report for defaulters. Because if you weren't washed and shaved, it was another charge, another set of defaulters for you. So they were ruthless on us. And I came into the barrack room on the Friday night, tired after having done so much work, running around, because they'd blow defaulters at the double if they wanted you, and you'd be sent off on jobs up the officer's mess. And when I came back in the barrack room, my mates had got round and went into my locker and got all my kit up, cleaned up and put on the bed, ready for inspection. Now you may say, well, where am I going to sleep? Because they occupy the whole of the bed. The bed's laid down, the bottom part's folded out, the blankets are folded in a special way at the top end of the bed, and then your kit is laid on with you, your socks, your towels, your shirts, your underwear and all that, and absolutely spiff and order, with your pull through an oil bottle on 4x2 and your mess tins, and your all the paraphernalia that you issued with had to be on show, either on the bed or in the locker. While these lads had done all my stuff for us. The lot was laying there. Now you may say, where am I going to sleep? Well, this was common with a defaulter. He'd sleep on the floor, because we were quite hard men, by the way. We'd sleep on the floor because the bed space was taken up, and nowhere could we get our bed up for inspection prior to this 6:30 a.m. Defaulter call and then punishment. And then the company commander come round and inspect the beds at 10 o'clock. So the lads had got everything ready for us, and I nearly burst into tears when I saw this, because I envisaged going back to the barrack room and having to start in the dark to get all the stuff on the bed, because very strict. 9:30 was roll call. Around, I said before, would come the company order sergeant, check all bed spaces. And then after that, at 10 o'clock, the bugles would sound for the staff parade to assemble, so they'd go up and report the company president or otherwise. And then at 10:15, lights out. And that meant every light out in the barracks. So if we did have to put our kits out on the bed after all our punishment, we'd have to put it down in the dark, which meant it mightn't be in line, it mightn't be neat and tidy. The bed might have wrinkles or creases in it, which we used to get pulled up for, have no doubt about that. Everything had to be tip-top. Well, these lads done me the power of good and get me stuff ready. And I lay on the floor that night with a US blanket, as we call them, on the bottom. And that one of the lads flung us his US blanket. It's a US blanket. It's an unserviceable blanket. It's used for many chores. We sometimes put them on the floor when we've polished the bed space, or we put them on the bottom of the bed when we're creasing our trousers and khaki. And it was just a spare blanket, so that one of them flung us his spare blankets, or what have you, and I lay on the floor sleeping. And I was away on me early defaulters next day. And at 10 o'clock, company commander comes around, and you stand at your bed, everybody fully dressed in khaki and best boots, best putties, everything. And a company commander comes around and inspects your kits. More so the sergeant major. If he finds a fault of any sort, you say to the platoon sergeant, put this man on a charge. Now you're on more defaulters. So the whole purpose of that was really to ensure that a man done his best in his kit inspection. And so we passed this kit inspection, and my 2 days of defaulters, which is, by the way, it was the only defaulters I ever got.
That was when you were a private?
When I was a private, yes. I only answer that question because you asked me. Was a godsend. The 2 days over, I thought was great. How these men went on day after day getting punished and always on defaulters, I've no idea. But maybe I was too serious-minded about the army. Maybe they were slipshod and couldn't care less. Maybe they're hoping that they'd get chucked out of the army or pushed out of the battalion.
Before I interrupted you, you were going to tell me about your duties on guard duties as a corporal.
Yes.
Lance Corporal.
We are on the series of quarter guards now, and this is always taken very, very seriously, a quarter guard. They used to say that the eyes of the smartness and efficiency of a battalion reflected on a standard of quarter guards. By that we mean visiting officers, people passing, seeing the smart quarter guard on parade, reflected that this was a smart battalion. So part of my duties as a Lance Corporal was a quarter guard would be selected by the RSM. On his daily routine duties, he'd detail a company to provide the 5 men for guard. He'd detail a sergeant or a corporal for the guard commander, and the Lance Corporal IC reliefs, and also a bugler. He'd give this off on daily routine orders, and that would be put up 2 days in advance, warning you that you would be on guard on a certain date. And from there on, you really got cracking on your equipment and polished and cleaned up. Now, what does this mean by polished and cleaned up? We went on guard in our best KD, a best uniform, best everything. We wore our full marching order, and it all had to be perfectly clean and blanco. By that, full marching order means a belt, a thick, wide belt, MDs, pouches for to carry ammunition, a frog on the side for your bayonet, a small haversack on the side, a water bottle with its cork in, with its, the little metals on the cork burnished clean, with a little string on the tied the cork to the cat, water bottle, blancoed white. On the other side, you had your haversack. Everything had to be squared off and smart. On your back, you had your large pack, which was only used for ceremonial occasions or route marches. We used to use them for route marches, but in a different kettle of fish, we wore them slack and loose on our back with our ground sheet in and cleaning kit and change of socks and different things in our haversack. So they looked sloppy, but they were very handy things. We used to fit them onto our equipment in a proper manner. But for guard duties, you had to put your greatcoat inside of it. And for to make it smarter, we had what are called kit boards. There are pieces of three plywood, which were shaped the exact size of the pack at the back and the bottom and the front. You'd put your greatcoat in, and then you press these plywoods around the side so that when you fasten your pack up, it was perfect square. And no sloppiness, no slobber about it. It had to be perfect. And you tie down your straps on it, and then they had crisscross straps going across, which we used for carrying our helmets on other exercises. But you had to show every bit of equipment you had on the quarter guard. And all the shirts and everything that you wore had to bear your regimental number. By regimental numbers, every man's kits. Every little thing you had was marked with your regimental number. Inasmuch as your boots were stamped with a proper steel stamp, so that it would be marked in the leather. Your putties would be stamped with an indelible ink, so that your numbers would be on the putties, on your khaki and everything. On your shirts you wore a tape with your regimental number stitched on, a white tape in front of your shirt here. And our shirts wore brass buttons, small brass buttons, so did your trousers, small brass buttons. And you went on this parade for Guard Mountain, which was taken very seriously. The RSM always took the parade, with a BOS present, with a company order sergeant stand behind present, because if you're pulled up for any default of dress or turnout or drill, you're put on a charge and given defaulters and taken before company commander. The battalion orders officer used to come along, so the RSM would fall a guard in, drill them a bit, get them in position. He wouldn't drill them too much because he didn't want to knock them around. Everything on the soldier was turned out as perfect as he could turn it. And the orderly officer had to inspect this guard. And so up could come the orderly officer wearing his sword, and the RSM with his sword. Full ceremonial duty this was. They'd walk down inspecting the guard. The orderly officer's job was partially to seek the best man turned out on this quarter guard, and he was selected as commanding officer's stick orderly for the duration of the guard's tour of duty. Now, the guard's tour of duty was 24 hours, so the guard mount would take place at 9 o'clock in the morning on the square. The orderly officer would inspect you. Anyone faulted would have the names taken. He'd have you, after he'd inspect you personally, they'd move off the front and they'd have you port your arms for inspection. That means port arms brings your rifle up in front of you, and you open the bolts, put your thumb in front of the cocking piece, so that if the orderly officer wants to inspect down the barrel, he steps back and you bring the rifle down so that he can look down the barrel. All part of drill. So he inspects the rifle, inspects the polish on the thing, inspects everything on it for any signs of dust or rust. If it was rust, you'd be court-martialed. We used to take great pride in our rifles. And then he'd step back and he'd bring your rifle down to the inspection position where he could look down the barrel, and the light reflecting on your thumbnail as he looked down the barrel, the way you position your thumb in the barrel, he could see any dirt or any rust markings in the barrel. Or if you'd been firing your course, sometimes you had fouling in the barrel, which used to take an awful lot of getting off, like the metal coming off the round would get into the grooves of the thing, and you used to have to use a gauze, but you had to get special permission from the armourer to use a gauze. So it very rarely happened, but anyway, you'd inspect the rifles for cleanliness, for everything that was possible. Once he passed, you'd come back to the port. Highport.
Wouldn't then Lance Corporal be inspected in the same
yes,
way?
Yes, exactly the same way.
So you'd have a special responsibility?
The whole guard got inspected. Not just the men, but the command, the orderly officers also looking for the best man, the best private soldier. The Lance Corporal and the Sergeant or the Corporal are the guard. They are fixed. They can't be taken off. But he's looking for the best man. Now, in some instances, it has been known, not in my time, he has difficulty in finding a comparative good man. He finds two who are comparative, and he's got to make a decision. He'll make them open up their tunics to have a look at their shirts are marked, see that the brass buttons on the shirts are clean. And they've been going to know to check even on the putty markings to find a good stick man. Well, once he's selected a stick man, him and the RSM march off 15 paces to the front, turn about,